Welcome to The Gut Goddess Show, a weekly podcast to help you create one happier, flatter, and more joyful belly and life. I'm your host, Kezia Hall, a nutrition and functional medicine geek. And interesting fact about me, when I was little, I used to want to be a dolphin trainer. Yep. So, let's get the show started. So welcome to this week's episode of the Gut Goddess Show. And this week what we're going to be doing is talking about how you can shift your mindset and stop binge eating. Because it's something that I talk a lot with my clients. It's something I've experienced and even recently have had to do a little bit of work around. And it's a topic I think that when it comes to shifting our mindsets, we often know we need to do it, but can feel a little bit overwhelmed at how on earth we begin. Like, what does it even mean to, air quotes, shift your mindset? Where do you begin? What are the practical ways you can do that? And what has it got to do with the way that you eat and the way you feel? Surely, you know, you just need to eat healthy things and whatever, just stop binge eating. But often I find with clients, it actually goes a lot deeper. And this whole area of mindset is really, really important, actually, when it comes to creating a healthy life and healing your body and feeling amazing in the skin you're in. And so this week, to help with this, I've got our first guest. Yay! Which is exciting. So for the last six or seven episodes, I have just done solo episodes, which I will continue to do in future. And I did those episodes because I really wanted to lay some good foundations for the podcast, really get a couple of core messages out. But I have got some great interviews lined up for you guys. And so if you're listening to this and you can think of someone that you think would be a great fit for the Gut Goddess Show, then send me a message on Instagram or via the blog on the comments section at the bottom of every post. Or you can email us at info@supernaturallyhealthy.org. Let us know if there are any guests or any topics you'd love to hear the podcast. But today we have Laura from Wholeheartedly Laura. And Laura is actually the lady who I started podcasting with like over 2.5 years ago. She's a really good friend. We ran retreats together. And she is a real kind of powerhouse when it comes to self-care, mindset, and all other good stuff going on. She's the person I tend to go to when it comes to really practical and simple strategies to help shift our mindset and really transform the way that we behave, especially around food and around our bodies. She's gone through a journey herself of disordered eating and actually coming out the other side as a really wholeheartedly healthy woman. And this conversation in today's episode is basically us having a bit of a chat because we're good pals, but also looking specifically at binge eating and how you can begin to shift your mindset. So this is an episode not to be missed. Healthy eating is not just about kale and spinach. It's also about the thoughts that you have 24/7. They contribute and play a huge role in your overall health, in your well-being, and everything else. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Otherwise, I will see you next week, lovely. Bye. Welcome, Laura, to the Gut Goddess Show.
Hello, Kezia. It's nice to be chatting to you again.
I was just saying, I was like, oh, I'll be like introducing you. But for those of you listening who have subscribed to the podcast from the beginning, you'll be like, oh, I know Laura. I used to listen to her every week. So, but for those of you that maybe don't know you, Laura, tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and where you're from, as Silla Black would say.
I haven't heard that one for ages. You had a bit of a Silla Black twang there,
I thought. Yeah, what would she say? Oh, what's your name and where'd you come from? I don't know if that's the right accent. But she'd
say sounded a bit more Geordie to me.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Which is what I kind of am. So I'm from Newcastle. So my name's Laura Agar Wilson. I live up in Durham, which is just south of Newcastle. And I am a wellbeing coach and business mentor for other coaches. And I help women basically live a more wholehearted life. So that looks like getting out of your own way, basically, being more confident, you know, living life on your terms instead of just by default. And that's really what I'm passionate about, is helping women reach the full potential. I know it sounds a bit cheesy, but I think that's kind of what it is. And my journey was very much involved in health. It started off being, you know, I started off blogging around weight loss and my weight loss, and then that turned into a bit of an eating disorder that I had, and I had some fertility struggles, and then kind of got over those, and then realized that there was a heck of a lot more to life than being on a diet and trying to be skinny at all costs. And I think part of living life to the full for me was around starting my own business and working for myself and doing something that I loved that was going to help other people.
Yeah. No, I love all that. So good. It's so funny. We do like sort of inherit a sort of default setting when it comes to not just food and diet and health and body image, but in so many other areas as well. Like, I know women that maybe have never even thought of running their own business because it's this, the default they've been given is, well, you need to work at this job and have your pension, and you know, they might be hating their job, but there's never kind of been, their default is you have to have that sort of quote unquote secure and stable job.
Yes, I've had that conversation a lot with people in my family at different times. Like, I used to have like a local authority job. So when I left that local authority job to go and work for a charity, it was a bit like, are you crazy? Believe in a local, like a stable local authority job that you could work in. And I mean, again, you know, sometimes that really suits people, having that stability and working somewhere for a lot of years, but I knew it wasn't going to suit me. And I think I just found that I was asking myself, like, there's got to be more to life than this quite often. And I felt like I was on a hamster wheel every day, and I had the Sunday night dread. And that was definitely part of me changing to want to create this business that helps other people.
I love not having a Sunday night dread.
Yeah. That's definitely one of the most refreshing things is not going to bed thinking, oh, like, I really don't want to start this week. I think that's one of the best things about it.
Oh, it's that I always think about it, you know, I don't want to go to school feeling like when you're little. I'm like, Mom, I don't want to go to school the next day. It's that sort of Sunday night feeling. And I always used to come for me with, like, you know, anxiety and all of that sort of stuff. And actually then realizing as time went on that things could be a bit more flexible. And it doesn't mean that everyone starts their own business, but that it's just that idea of not being on that default position and knowing there's different options for that. But what I really wanted us to talk about today, Laura, because you're kind of one of the people I think of really when I think about mindset and your body and food, was really diving into kind of your different approaches and your philosophy really to how we can shift our mindset. I know it's something I've spoken about and I talk about and sprinkle in a lot into the podcast, but I think it's worth talking about on its own because it's a really big shift, I think, for women to make. And specifically, I think around areas of like binge eating, I often get asked about women, you know, they'll be like, I've been so, air quotes, good for a while, and then I just end up binge eating and feeling awful, and then I get back on track and good again. And you know, you know, there's that cycle. Or people, you know, talk about, you know, this wagon that exists. Which I'm like, where did this wagon come from? I don't know where it's come from, but you know, on and off the wagon, or on track, off track, or just feeling like they have really, really good days and then end up like binging like nothing else. And sometimes without even realizing it. What would you say to the women you work with and have worked with around that relationship with food?
I think it's the place to start with it is to realize just how much conditioning we have around our relationship with our weight and food as women. And where all of our mindset stuff usually stems from is often experiences that we have when we're younger, that form basically our neural pathways and our brain, the way that our brain functions. Our mindset is basically a collection of thoughts and beliefs that we have that inform how we relate to other things in our life. So I like to think about mindset in terms of relationships, so relationships with food, with money, with your body, with other people. And it's kind of helpful to understand sometimes how these things come about. And often because we're women and society is horrendous when it comes to women and women's bodies and how we're perceived and weight loss, that we've got a lot of baggage that we carry around with us, usually subconsciously, that makes us behave in certain ways around food. And one of the things that I often suggest to people who might be trying to lose weight is to actually stop trying to lose weight, because as soon as your brain focuses on weight loss, you're very, very likely to self-sabotage if you've got those kind of patterns of thought.
Yeah.
Just because it's such an emotive topic and there's so much baggage around it. And when you put the focus there, your brain, because basically your brain's always trying to keep you safe. Like your brain's main job is to keep you safe and survival. And what happens is that if you have an experience when you're younger that makes you feel in any way disconnected or rejected, those are two really important things that are like a baseline things, if you like. If something makes you feel disconnected or rejected, and remember, like going back to primal times, if you had felt disconnected or rejected from the tribe, that was highly unsafe. Like you wouldn't survive without the tribe. Mm. So you're in your brain's primal, you know, we're still operating on the same like primal instincts that we were like thousands of years ago. And I know it sounds kind of weird comparing these to modern day times, but it's actually really important to understand. So so when we've had those experiences that have made us feel that way, our brain will stop us from having those experiences again or anything similar to that to prevent us from feeling disconnected or rejected in order to keep us safe. So for example, if when you were younger, you had like an experience, let's say that your mum dieted and you saw her being really restrictive with food, and to you that made you think that you should be, you know, that thin is really good, and obviously no one wants to feel disconnected or rejected, so you took on this thing that being thin is what you should be. Mm-hmm. And that creates this thing in your brain where it's like, well, being thin is safe. But often what happens is that you've got other things that come into that. So you might have an experience that is like, well, food is naughty, or food, you know, food has got this, you know, and it just start, all these different things start to play off against each other. And often we have this yo-yo effect, which has been all or nothing, where we know we're really good. I'm doing air quotes, everybody. Really good. And then we suddenly kind of something like a switch flips and we could become bad. So I know that's a little bit complex, but I think it is helpful to understand how some of these things come about. Another habit that a lot of women seem to have is that they use food is that they don't really fully feel their emotions and they use food to numb out. So this is a bit of a pattern that a lot of people say, and I definitely saw this in myself a while ago, was that if you feel like, it can be boredom, it can be sadness, depression, anger, what happens is that we're so used to not fully feeling those, like suppressing them, that we numb them out through eating food. And that's very typical in binge eating as well, is that we use food to numb out. And the best way around that is to start and slowly practice allowing yourself to feel uncomfortable feelings, because the best way to deal with them is to actually process them, not just numb them out. But it is tricky, but it's totally, you know, it's totally doable.
Yeah. No, I think those are two really important points, actually. It's for those of you listening, it's thinking about like what are the kind of default settings that could have been created when you were younger around food, because you'll have been shown some sort of relationship with food, good or bad. And I know for me, a lot of it was around food. The good side of things was food was used as a celebration and for building family and for community and as a really social thing. So that mm-hmm. Those were the really amazing lessons I learned, my defaults around food, mm-hmm. hospitality and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But then some of the negatives were a lot around food being a comfort, food being a way to cope emotionally.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Situations. You know, I have shared before how I started my first diet when I was about 11. So mm-hmm. I was very much surrounded by this kind of dieting culture. So those things, actually, the negative things as well as the positive, became my default in terms of numbing out, like feeling mm-hmm. strong emotions. I didn't have the tools upon which to deal with them, mm-hmm. being young and then growing into an adult, you know, in mm-hmm. my early 20s. feeling lots of emotions, having not a clue what to do with them. So my solution was just to never talk about things ever and never feel things ever. So yeah. You can imagine how all those emotions, they had to leak out of me somewhere. So it would have been it, and it was mainly in my relationship with my body, mm-hmm. and my relationship with food, that became very toxic because there was so much of this emotion that I just didn't have the tools to deal with it. So it was like festering.
That's a really good word for it. And I think there's a, you know, there is like an angle for this, which is, you know, women in society, like women generally in society, and again I think things are changing up, but you know, traditionally we haven't been like, it's not feminine to be emotional, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the time we have just been taught to kind of like not to be able to express those emotions very well. So we have to, there's a lot of like relearning I think that we need to do, especially if we're using food to cope, of being okay, it's okay to feel a bad feeling. Mm-hmm. It's a lot better than pushing it down and suppressing it, because that's how it, you know, that's how we work through it. So, and then when you add on all of the bag, like I say, the emotional baggage that we have around the experiences that we might have had around weight and food, mm-hmm. That just adds another thing. And I mean, a lot of women carry around the subconscious, like, you know, this is good food, this is bad food, and there's a moral implication about that as well. So I think a lot of women have taken on this thing, you know, I'm a good person if I eat good food, and I'm a bad person if I eat bad food.
Yeah,
as well, which I think is obviously problematic. Like massively.
And as soon as you eat, I don't know, whatever, a Snickers bar or some ice cream, your whole identity then becomes a failing person, a bad person, a greedy person, a lazy person, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. When actually all you've done is eaten some ice cream, like you've not done anything with any moral implications. You've not, you know, pushed a granny down the stairs or not paid a bill or stolen something. You've literally just eaten food. But yeah. We allow the foods that we eat to tell us our value and our mm-hmm. identity, which is odd when you realize that. When you can take a step back and be like, oh, I'm allowing this piece of bread or this cheese toasty or this, or the opposite way, this apple to make me feel really, really smug and awesome. But yeah. When I eat the carrot cake, I'm a total failure. Mm-hmm. You're like, well, it's just food.
It's just food. I think this is the thing. I think it's so much, so many of us just, it's not just food to us. And that's the thing that we need to get back to, is it is just food.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, but it just it's all the other stuff that it carries. And I do feel like it's one of those things, I think for some people it's really useful to go back and think about what their experiences have been, what they can remember, like what their kind of stories are around food and weight, and just kind of unpick those a little bit and see how they might be impacting them now, because often that's where, you know, where it comes from, and that's where our mindset and our beliefs come from, those experiences. And and starting to change those is always really, really helpful when you can identify what they might be and what needs to change.
Yeah. No, it's been helpful. Even for me recently with being pregnant, I've been wanting to eat foods that I don't normally eat. And even noticing, not a huge dialogue, but a definite inner dialogue around eating more processed foods, because mm-hmm. I've been so tired and ill, I've not been making lots of stuff from scratch, or more crisps. Mm-hmm. And then even hearing that old familiar voice back in my head, because traditionally I wouldn't eat a lot of that stuff before being pregnant, because I just genuinely didn't want to eat it, wasn't bothered, not, there's other things I'd rather mm-hmm. eat. And then suddenly really wanting to eat it, so I'm not vomiting everywhere. But then also, you know, the nutrition part of my brain being like, I know this is filled with hydrogenated fats, and
yes,
it has immediately on my cell, blah, blah, blah. You know, well, sometimes knowledge isn't a helpful thing. And actually being like, okay, it could have been really easy. And moments when I was like, oh, I'm such a bad nutrition person, or because I've eaten loads of crisps today, or feeling bad about eating loads of crisps, mm-hmm. and actually having to realize, which I've not had to do for a while, to be honest, mm-hmm. I think it becomes habit, and you do just get used to the foods that you eat mm-hmm. majority of the time. But actually going on and picking, being like, does eating crisps, Kezia, make you a bad person? And then when you ask yourself that question, you're like,
yeah,
Oh, no, no, it doesn't. Actually, it's probably helpful for the people, you know, around me in the supermarket, because I'm not going to vomit everywhere. So that is actually a service.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, in general, actually, does this make me a bad person? Is this going to be the rest of my life? Does this say something about my worth or my value or my body size, image, or my beauty or whatever it is? And just be like, no, because it's just crisps.
Yeah.
Literally, it's just some potatoes and some oil. That's it.
Yeah.
But I think it's easy. It's one of those things it's just that awareness of it. And it is that inner dialogue that can go on inside your head that it's just initially, I think if you're at the very start of this journey, it is just taking a little bit of time to grow that awareness and be intentional. Yeah. And I suppose that's where things like journaling and kind of keeping a journal of, you know, maybe not just the foods that you eat, but how you feel
throughout
the day can be quite helpful to do. Not necessarily because you're tracking calories or any crap like that. You're just actually being like, oh, I felt really rubbish after eating that cake. Why is that? Because the opposite should also be true then in terms of on the good side, when you know, it gives you that freedom to then make those choices of, oh, I'm going to go out with my family. I'm going to order a salad and not have dessert because that's genuinely what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And it makes you equally free to do that and equally free to be like, oh, I'm going out with my family. I really want that humongous burger and a chocolate fudge sundae for dessert. And I'm going to really enjoy it. And it just means there's no inner dialogue or inner drama around that. It's literally just you listening to your body and giving it what it needs in that moment.
Yeah.
Which is very powerful and much less draining, I think.
I think it's kind of a mixture of like just unpicking some of those, like the limiting beliefs that you might have around food, for example, and just kind of getting those and having some awareness around those. But I think what generally happens is that when we just go into default mode, we're operating on our subconscious level and we're not really like, you know, when you just kind of, you're not really thinking about what you're doing. The next thing you know, you're standing up in the kitchen and you've ate half a packet of cookies or whatever. And then it's like, how did this happen? I didn't quite fully. And it's just when you've kind of just slipped, like, it's almost a bit like going unconscious. You've just kind of slipped into your default setting. And I think it's catching yourself and being a little bit more intentional. But at the same time, like, not everyone, that you can't constantly be like on the ball all the time and be totally conscious about every single thing that you're doing around food. But if you're doing some of like that work around just uncovering what those beliefs are, they'll start to change a little bit as well. Mm-hmm. And you act as, so when you are kind of defaulting, it won't be the same kind of defaulting as what it was before, if that makes sense.
Yeah. How would you recommend people to get started if they feel like they are very much in that stage of, I am definitely living out of default, especially around food. And, you know, I know that is something that needs to change. Where would you recommend someone to begin with that?
I think you would take it like a two-pronged approach. I think firstly, it might be keeping the journal, just like what you were saying around, just to bring some intention. And again, like, this is what way I think you've got to be really tuned into yourself, because some people find that keeping like a journal or a diary, and I don't mean like a food diary, like Weight Watchers points food diary. I just mean like bringing some intention to it. And some awareness around it. But some people will find that really triggering. So I think you've got to kind of feel out like how that feels and what's going to work for you. But I think bringing some kind of intention back to how it is that you're eating and behaving around food is really useful. But at the same time, I do think it's helpful to just think about like when I think about food and my body and weight, like what thoughts come up? What are my beliefs around this? What's going through my head? And just to start and pull some of those out and see what they are. Because often when we can see what they are and we look at what they are, you start to realize that a lot of them are a little bit ridiculous. And I don't mean that in like a derogatory way, but our subconscious is totally illogical. It's like, you know, a lot of the stuff that comes out of that, and just free writing, I think, is a really good place to start with it. Stuff will come up that's just totally random.
And free writing, what do you mean by free writing? Just in case someone
doesn't. So just sitting down with a notepad and pen, like a rubbishy notepad, not like your best journal, because I think that's a lot easier.
Just to get too much pressure then.
Yeah, and just ask yourself a question like, what are my beliefs around food, weight, and my body? And just like let everything kind of come out. And I think if you just set yourself, let's say, like, I'm going to write for like 4 pages. I'm not going to stop writing, even if I'm just writing utter bollocks. I'm going to keep on writing. And you'll see that stuff will start to pop out. Stuff will start to come out. And then I think it's looking at that and asking yourself some questions around the things that have come out. And often it's like, is this belief that I have logical? Like, if I, you know, for me, and this is a conversation I've had with some people recently on my course, which is, for me, because I had a disordered relationship with food before, one of the blocks that I had was, if I start exercising consistently again, I'll become obsessed again. Like, that was one of the limiting beliefs that I had. But it's not, I know that logically that wouldn't happen. Like, I'm a mum now, there's no way, like, I wouldn't have the time, like, I would not have the time or the energy to do that again. So it's, but, and knowing that is kind of like lifted that block, which was actually buried in my head. Once I wrote it down and like acknowledged it, it was like, I'm acknowledging that. Now crossing it out, because I can see that logically that wouldn't happen. Whereas if I hadn't consciously noticed that and acknowledged it, it would have just sat underneath my, like, in my subconscious, making me self-sabotage, like, doing exercise without us even realizing that that was what was causing it. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, that does. And I think it's that process of getting thoughts out on paper can really help, because otherwise it can feel a bit overwhelming, like, oh, I need to shift my mindset. Well, I don't know how to begin with that. Whereas actually, if you can just write stuff out, give yourself a bit of time, don't hold back with everything. Write how you feel about your body, how you feel about food, what you feel about yourself. Then actually you can start to see this underlying current that we have throughout the day that we're not actually maybe aware of. And I've gotten a few clients to do this when there's a history of a lot of dieting and yo-yoing, and it can be really, really helpful for them to see the reality of their relationship with themselves, actually, and the couple of key sort of thoughts or beliefs or lies or whatever you want to call them that come up about, you know, them being worthy or the food that they eat. And I think that is a really, really helpful place to begin. I think journaling and getting stuff out, or I sometimes get clients to write a letter to their body as well. So, but it's exactly the same idea. It's just a different structure of it, because you write a letter and then you just let it, you know, you let it all go.
Yeah.
And it can be quite therapeutic, and also can unlock a lot of emotions as well.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that you can suddenly uncover all these things that you've been feeling.
I think that's what it is. I think it's just allowing stuff to come up to the surface and acknowledging it, because when it's buried, you can't, like, it's just there and it's affecting your behavior, but you don't really know about it. And I think when you let stuff come up to the surface, it can be really, really helpful. So I think that's super, super useful. And when I work with people about mindset, I try, and again, it's like taking a couple of different approaches. And I think there's stuff you can do that help with the subconscious beliefs and thoughts, but then there's stuff that you can do that's very practical, on like a day-to-day basis, like in real time. And one of those tools is a CBT technique. So no one's come across CBT. It's cognitive behavioral therapy. It's a pretty well-known therapeutic practice that helps people, often people with anxiety and stress, but some of the techniques work really, really well for this stuff as well. And one of the techniques is an acronym called STOP. And I might have to look it up, because I always forget what things stand for.
But yeah, they stand.
It's, first of all, it's the first, so the S is to just stop, is to just catch yourself and just stop. The T is to take a breath and just kind of have like a moment. And then the O is to observe, and just observe how you're feeling. Observe what's going on. And this is kind of like, you know, if you're defaulting, this is like the wakey up, this is like waking up type of thing. And then the first P is, I'm going to have to look it up now.
All I can think of is it Spice Girls song, Stop Right Now? That's how I would remember that.
That's a good one, actually. I think those kind of things are really, really helpful when you need to remember something.
Yes, I remember if I can link it to a song or a melody. I think I still remember the dance moves that they used to do as well.
Yes, I can remember the dancers. I can see them in my head.
20, like, who? The Spice Girls? I used to be a fan.
I know, but that's a bit of a blast from the past, isn't it?
I know.
I will find this because I do have it written down. Ah, yes. So then the first P is to pull back and put in some perspective. So it's just like coming back to yourself, like looking at the bigger picture. you know, is what's going on, like, factor opinion? Is it something, how would you get out of this situation? What advice would you give to a friend? And just kind of taking in some perspective. And then the final P is to proceed with the best option based on your values. So it's just like, I keep forgetting the last two P's. I mean, I'm getting better. I think the more that you think about it, the more it'll stick in your head. But yeah, it's just little things like that. And I think it's just ways of catching yourself.
Yeah.
And there's a few different techniques. There's another one called ACT, which is like a similar kind of acronym, about accepting the way that you're feeling. And then I'll look at that one again because the C's kind of over my head. Which is accepting reactions and then choosing and committing to your values. And then take an action in the like direction of your values as well. So there's little like things you can remember just to kind of stop yourself as you're doing it and just take in the bigger picture and actually like, yeah, because this is, I think, when we're acting so on default, we're not really doing that. And then that's one of the things that I really like for starting to work like on a more subconscious level is EFT, which is emotional freedom technique.
Oh yes.
That's which is really interesting. So if you YouTube it, if you do a search on YouTube, I really like Brad. You'll find Brad. Brad's brilliant.
We're all a fan of Brad. He must have like one of the biggest YouTube channels.
He must do.
He's like the EFT guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he's really cool. So you can just do like a search for it. And it's basically, it does sound a bit weird, but I think it's really, really interesting. And even if you don't, because it's based on along similar lines of acupuncture in terms of basically like tapping on certain parts of your body while making statements, is going to shift your emotions and it shifts like the energy inside your body. But I think some of the research that's been done recently is more about how when you're tapping, you're putting yourself into a relaxed state. And then if you're stating the things that are creating like discomfort within you and difficult emotions within you, it's like sending the signal to your brain that it's okay to relax around them, if that kind of makes sense. Mm-hmm. If you're saying, you know, even though I feel really fat and ugly today, I deeply and completely love and accept myself, while you're doing a tapping routine, you're saying those things, but you're saying it in like, you're relaxing your body while you're doing it. So it kind of dissolves it a little bit. I know that's not even the technical thing, but that's kind of what the research is.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. It's starting to like work on the different systems in your body that respond to stress and discomfort and things like that.
Yeah. Well, you're using your words, you're expressing emotion, but then you are also tapping on those different acupressure points. So you've got that kind of joint, that flow of those, and that synergy is a better word,
yes,
of those different things. And it is very relaxing. If you can give yourself like, you know, to begin with like a good, I remember the first 10 minute or 15 minute routine I did, I felt really different by the end of it. And now I'll just try and do it like at little slots in the day if I find myself just in a spiral about something. And it can just be a really helpful way of shaking you out of a habit or out of a way of thinking and kind of expressing emotion, but not feeling trapped by it or held by it. Of like, I feel this, I'm expressing it, I'm letting it out, I'm letting it go into the world so I don't have to hold it anymore. It's quite liberating and easy way of just all those emotions that we're going to have in the day, all those feelings we're going to have, all those thoughts we're going to have, taking them on board and actually processing them in a really quick way, which is quite helpful. Otherwise you can sometimes get to the end of the day or the end of the week and be a little bit like, oh, I'm really down in the dumps. That began on Tuesday. Why was that? Oh, because I had a horrible interaction and it's lasted for like 5 days.
Yeah.
You could have maybe nipped it in the bud by just kind of digesting the emotion. As I tend to think of
it. Sometimes it is just catching yourself. Like something that I've started doing is like, I used to feel off, but I would never like fully sit down and think about why.
Mm.
And now something that I do is it's just like, if I don't feel quite, or if I notice myself starting to go to the kitchen to eat something just for the sake of it, I'll stop myself and say, hold on a minute. Like, what's going on here? Like, what's actually underneath this kind of slightly, and it's not like a massively strong emotion, because I think sometimes this is the thing, it's often like, if it's boredom or if it's just like a bit of like uncomfortable, a bit of anxiety about a situation in your life or something that's kind of like low level, it can still make you emotionally eat. But often it's like, it's just catching yourself and asking why, like what's actually going on, and just taking a minute to ask yourself what's happening.
Yeah, I think it's really, that it's powerful just to stop and just think about, okay, what is going on? Why am I about to eat an entire packet of hot cross buns?
Yes.
Is it genuinely really hungry? In which
case, oh yeah,
you need to eat some food. Is it because you're just a bit bored? Is it? And even if you, even if the outcome doesn't shift, even if you do eat a packet of hot cross buns to begin with, then there's still that awareness, and it's coming from a much more empowered place.
Yeah,
and you're doing it from a place of choice. And I am really hungry. I've just come back from a busy day of work, and I really like hot cross buns or whatever.
Yeah,
then that's okay. But it just means your driving force behind it is something that is a lot more powerful and kind of more controlled in a way, because it's not happening to you. You are choosing it. And I think even that, people often think, you know, this mindset stuff will then mean you never eat a half a pack of cookies again, but you might still well eat it because you maybe have some girlfriends around and they're your favorite cookies, but you're not doing it out of default. You're doing it because you want to, you choose to, you get to, it doesn't affect your mood, and you feel good doing it, and you move on as soon as you.
I think there's a lot to be said, and something I often say to clients is just like, let yourself off the hook and actually do the things that you're resistant on purpose, because when you do things on purpose, you're doing it from the place of empowerment, not disempowerment. So like, just own, like if you want to eat chocolate, just eat the chocolate, just own that choice, rather than eating the chocolate and feeling guilty as hell and feeling like crap. And then what usually happens is you feel like crap and then you go and eat something else to numb out that emotion of guilt. So, but if you just start to do things on purpose, it just takes away that. It massively like changes the relationship with what it is that you've done, because like you say, if you eat six hot cross buns off the trot and you've done it on purpose, and it's like you've made that decision, like it should take away a lot of the guilt that might be lingering. Because if you were feeling a lot of the guilt, then that's where often binges, like big binges, come from, because you start eating more. So just let yourself off the hook. Make it a conscious choice.
Making choice just on purpose food choices.
Purpose. I mean, I had a client who would feel really guilty because each night she would sit and eat chocolate on the sofa, like a little bit of chocolate, not like loads, like a little bit, you know, and felt guilty for it. And I was like, right, just do it on purpose, because there's nothing to feel guilty for. But you just like plan that in, like plan it in, plan to sit on the couch and relax and eat chocolate and enjoy it. And that just completely changed the way that she like related to that thing, because that's like a little bit of guilt every day. She was still going to do it because she was kind of that was a bit of an ingrained habit, but like it's not going to like, you know, really hurt our well-being. It's not going to do anything terribly wrong. Eat a bit of dark chocolate on the sofa. Do you know what I mean? She just owned that decision. And then I think when you own that decision, you're much more likely to be able to say, well, actually I don't really need it tonight, or I don't really want it tonight.
So tried it as a client, and it was similar but with bread. So she felt like she shouldn't eat bread. She didn't have celiac disease. It didn't seem that she had a strong intolerance to it, and she didn't have loads of other health issues or digestive issues going on, but she just felt bad about eating bread. But she loved bread, and so her whole day was around, I shouldn't eat bread, but I love bread, so I've eaten bread. Oh, but I should tomorrow I won't eat bread. Like there was just this constant sort of circle around bread, and I was like, bread has become this really powerful thing in your life. It's just bread. And actually, so some of her actions was to eat bread every day.
Yeah.
Instead of having these bread binges where she'd maybe be good for 2 days and not eat bread, and then go and eat like millions of it in an evening, just have a little bit every day when she wanted it. Like have it with a soup at lunch, or have a piece of toast when she came home from work, or however she wanted to do it. For the similar thing of just actually changing that conversation and that constant sort of draining process. I shouldn't eat bread. I really want to eat bread. Oh, I'm going to eat bread. You know, I'm going to rebel. Don't tell me what to do. I'm going to eat loads of bread. And you just are like, oh, I mean, since when did bread become so powerful? It's just bread. Just literally flour and water and a bit of yeast shoved together. But I think that can be, it's a really helpful way of looking at it and letting yourself just off the hook with things. We, as women, we can be so harsh on ourselves, you know,
totally.
About the chocolate that you eat, or, you know, me recently with the crisps I've been eating, so easy for that harsh voice to come back and actually just be like, you know, tell you that you're not good enough, or that you should feel guilty and bad, when really if you make your food choices on purpose and you're aware, then it's just food.
That's all. Absolutely.
Ah, this has been fabulous, Laura. Thank you for coming on and chatting to us. And where could, if, well, I imagine a lot of people listening probably already know where you are. But if there's some new people, where could people find out more about you and the stuff you do around mindset and all of that kind of thing?
So you can find me at wholeheartedlylaura.com and on social media at wholeheartedlylaura. I've also got a course all about mindset if anyone wants to check that out. I'll be opening that up as a self-study course quite soon. So you can find out more at mindsetmakeovercourse.com if you want to check that out as well.
Fabulous. Oh, well, thank you very much for joining us. Make sure you go and check out Laura on Instagram or the Facebook, or obviously on her page.
The Facebook. You sound like a granny.
The Facebook. I think I've been chatting on to my 19-year-old granddad about it. My granddad's got a new smartphone and he's 19. Oh, yeah. And so he's got the WhatsApp on his phone. And he was
brilliant. Good for him.
And then he was like, what about the Facebook? I was like, okay, yes. Set your profile. So yeah, I've got that stuck in my brain. The Facebook.
I love it.
Brilliant. Oh well, for everyone listening, make sure you let me know in the comments or in the blog post on my page any questions about today or any other topics you want covered in the podcast. Otherwise, I'll see you next week for another episode. Lots of love, guys. Bye.